Now come to order. It's 3:18 on Friday, February 28th in Barnes Room 124. Members present are Representatives Hannon, Gillis, Story, Stutes, and myself, Representative Sponholz. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Take a moment to silence your cell phones if you haven't already done so for the duration of the meeting. Before we begin, I want to thank Sophia Tenney from House Labor and Commerce Secretary from Records and Amanda Kraft from the Juneau LIO for staffing the committee today. Today we're going to be covering three bills. House Bill 24 by Representative Christ Tompkins on limited teacher certificates for languages, HB 84 by Representative Josephson on workers' comp, and House Bill 91 by Representative Johnston on the practice of naturopathy. And first up, we have HB 24. Would Representative Christ Tompkins and Aaron Harrington please come forward? I believe that we have a CS to introduce, and I would like to ask Representative Stutes if she has a motion.
I do, Chairman Sponholz, thank you. I move that Labor and Commerce Committee adopt the blank committee substitute for House Bill 24, Work Order Number 31-LS0290/K. All right. It's a working document.
Thank you. And I will object for the purposes of discussion and recognize that Representative Fields joined us at 3:19. Representative Christ Tompkins and Ms. Harrington, would you like to walk us through the changes in the CS?
For the record, my name is Erin Harrington. I'm staff to Representative Christ Tompkins. And thank you for having us before you again and for having a look at the CS. So the version before you, version K, modifies the bill in two significant ways over what you considered at your last hearing. First, it moves the meat of the bill having to do with these limited certificates for teachers in immersion programs into a new section of statute, which would be AS 1420.023. In the previous version of the bill, we were amending existing statute 1420.025, which also deals with limited teacher certificates. And we had heard a concern from Representative Hannon that may in some way jeopardize the existing certificates, and we definitely did not want to run that risk. So we took the step of creating a new section of statute that deals specifically with limited language immersion teacher certificates. And then the second significant change from the CS that you looked at in your last meeting is that this version creates a new section, Section F, which is on page 2, lines 25 to 31. And this new section makes it clear that the intent is that for those teachers who are certificated under this limited immersion language program, specifically for instruction of world languages in world language immersion programs, that the pathway that is intended and envisioned for them is toward full professional licensure over time. And so it puts a time limit under which they can be certificated in this section. It makes it 5 years total. And so that would be the initial year of issuance as well as for a renewal up to 4 years for a total of 5 years. And then it also makes it clear that provision does not exist for instructors of Alaska Native languages for reasons that I think this committee has already discussed and heard. We understand that pathway to full certification, professional certification, may not be appropriate for an elder language bearer who will be, instructing in the immersion classroom. So those are the two significant changes. I just want to say that we really appreciate the strong workshopping that we've had on this bill in conversations in the past week and then in committee before that. We feel that the bill as it is now really sets up a good policy direction and makes a structure that works to the advantages of teachers, of school districts, of students, and also benefits the efforts to revitalize the Alaska Native languages.
All right. Thank you very much for presenting the CS. With the changes explained by Representative Christ Tompkins and by Ms. Harrington, I'm going to remove my objection to adopting the CS. Is there any further objection to adopting the CS? All right, seeing none, it's been adopted. I'm wondering, do you have any testifiers that are planning on being here today?
Madam Chair, Erin Harrington, no, we do not.
All right. Representative Hannon, do you have any comments on this?
Madam Chair,
thank you, and thank you to the sponsor. Over the last year, we've had hours of conversation around this subject, and I think we've narrowed it in scope to address concerns. I appreciate the sponsor for bringing and making sure we, you know, I think the ultimate inspiration for this is to seek an avenue for the growth of Alaska Native language speakers, not just the preservation, but the growth. And I certainly hope that we will see some funding from the state to support districts who choose to do full language immersion programs. There, you know, some districts have struggled to create programs and to get young people speaking and learning in a second language is a cost-intensive effort that we need to put our money to, and so I look forward to seeing the state do some additional funding of immersion language programs as we have a flourishing growth of diversity of language opportunities for young people in Alaska. So thank you to the sponsor and thank you to the staff for working with all my questions and concerns.
All right, thank you very much. Is there any additional comments on this?
Madam Chair, I hope we can get her done and get this bill on toward the floor. Thank you.
All right. I think that this bill has already had public testimony. There's not anybody in the room that's planning on testifying today. Nobody's raised any concerns. And so if there's unless there's any additional points of discussion, I would entertain, excuse me, Representative Grace Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just before any motion was made, I wanted to add my thanks to comments Ms. Harrington made and thank Representative Hannon for her thorough and detailed consideration. I think it was constructive and productive working through those thoughts, and I think the restructure and the CS version K is sort of a good in the abundance of caution approach of separating out a new section of statute for the immersion language certificates. And I think to the comment Representative Hannon made sort of more broadly, this is really the first concrete step in terms of policy change and change in law the state will be making in terms of an offensive move, if you will, against language endangerment and extinction. This is actually like something concrete that may help do something about it, and that means a lot to me, and it means a lot to tens of thousands of people around the state.
Thank you very much. I appreciate those comments, and I thank you for introducing this bill. I also do want to thank Representative Hannon for working so robustly with you and both of your offices who are sort of niggling into the details on this. We want to make sure that we do this right and that we're not creating any unintended consequences, and I think the bill is stronger for your collaboration. So thank you. Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move committee substitute for House Bill 24, Work Order 31-LS0290/K from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there any objection? All right, seeing none, the bill moves from committee, and we're going to take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Moving on to HB 84, Workers' Compensation, with Representative Josephson and Elise Sorum-Burke. Staff to Representative Josephson, please come forward. Give us a brief recap on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Happy Friday. I'm Andy Josephson, House District 17. A brief recap of this bill would be as follows. It is a top priority of state law enforcement in particular, that they also enjoy, and here I mean the troopers, that they also enjoy coverage in the event of exposure to carcinogenic chemicals, that exposure caused cancer within the limited window that currently exists in Title 23, so no expansion of the window. In addition, the bill, so that's a major thing the bill does. In addition, the bill clarifies and codifies some language in a case I talked about last week called Adamson, and essentially says whatever medical exam you did prior to the effect of the original law in August 2008, so if you're a somewhat older firefighter, is adequate. If you complied with whatever the department told you to do to pre-screen for things like cancer, that's adequate to comply or to receive this workers' comp in the event the worst happens, or maybe not the worst, but you have cancer. In addition, the bill makes clear that all state firefighters are covered. We've looked at this ad infinitum, and we're confident that the bill, the original bill from 2008, does not cover firefighters who work at, for example, airports and on campuses. So those are the principal things, and I'd ask Ms. Sorenberg if I'm missing anything.
Representative Josen, could you repeat your last sentence?
Sure. I think I said, Madam Chair, I think I said that the current law says that, for example, if I'm a firefighter at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, I'm putting out a fire, and I believe, well, I'll give you an example. I could have a respiratory problem from that fire. That's believable. And under this bill, I would not have a presumption that the respiratory problem I suffered from that fire, presumably within hours or days, was related to the fire, which is a sort of remarkable thing.
I think you actually stated a list of people that would or would not be included in the bill, actually.
Okay. I'm not feeling my best, so I may have.
That's fine. I just want to make sure that we're clear about who is included and who is not included.
Chair Sponholz, Elise Sornberg, Staff Representative Josephson, for the record, just to clarify, that's a reference to employees of the state who are firefighters or peace officers.
All right. Thank you. Are there any questions for Representative Josephson? Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Chair, were you able to find out whether the peace officer's definition included tribal police and others who, VPSOs and such, that in villages would be the likely first responders, you know, because those communities probably don't also, they're volunteer fire departments and the VPSO or tribal police, but I wasn't sure if they were considered peace officers under the statute.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I did put together a document that responded to questions. So there are two definitions of peace officer in Alaska statute. The one we use is broadly considered to be the broader definition of peace officer. So yes, it would include those categories. I can.
Does everybody else have this document, the Q&A document? I don't. All right. Maybe you could forward that to Ted Mattson and we could distribute it to the committee. All right. We'll forward it to everybody.
Thank you.
All right.
And if I could.
Go ahead.
The memo that my staff, I think, forwarded to the committee answers questions, Representative Hannon's question on the definition of peace officer, and also questions from Representative Hannon on exposure to carcinogens and questions about substantial proof. And also she had a question about claims, and that's an important topic, and I'll take that up now if I might real fast. The good news from both our point of view of our fiscal purse, but also the health and well-being of Alaskans, is that the current benefit from 2008 is rarely needed, right? So most of the claims that firefighters file now are unrelated to exposure. There are twisted knees and twisted ankles, which pretty obviously don't correlate. There is about once a year, there's a cancer claim that is filed, and there are about four respiratory claims that are filed per year. So this should not blow up municipal or state workers' comp insurance premiums. Mm-hmm. And then finally, Madam Chair, there was a question about further questions about female firefighters and evidence of their exposure and correlations to breast cancer. And I'll let Ms. Sorenberg tell the committee about that.
Ms. Sorenberg.
Through the chair, Representative. So I was able to connect with the Women's Firefighters Biomonitoring Collaborative study researchers this week following our Monday hearing. And I don't know, is Jessica on the line? Sure. So we have a PhD candidate who is working on that ongoing research in California who is available to answer questions of the committee and who knows much more about this topic than I do. I do want to mention that there was kind of something fortuitous and strange that happened this week is when I contacted this group, they said, we have two papers that are being published this week. So there's a paper that was published on Wednesday that I sent to the committee, sent to Mr. Madsen. And in this study, there's a question as to what groups were looked at. So the Biomonitoring Collaborative does different studies, and the cohorts of those studies are a little bit different in each study. In their most recent work, they are looking at PFAS chemicals specifically, and they're testing blood of office workers and of firefighters to look for differences in those PFAS chemicals, which are carcinogens. If you have any further questions, I think the researcher online would be better able to answer them than me.
All right, are there any other questions for Representative Josephson or Ms. Rumberg? Representative Story?
I actually was hoping to hear from the researcher online to talk about to the extent her information has been peer-reviewed. And
we'll go to her next, yeah. All right, any other questions for the bill sponsor? All right, thank you very much. We'll move on to Ms. Jessica Throwbridge.
Yes, hello, thank you. My name is Jessica Throwbridge. Thank you to the committee for having me and for considering adding breast cancer to this really important legislation. So I'll do my best to answer all the questions that you have. Just briefly about me, I'm a PhD student in my final year of the PhD. I recently published this paper that was just mentioned, and I've been working for the past 9 years on studying the impact of exposure, health impact to exposure to toxic chemicals. The past 6 years has been specifically on this cohort of women firefighters. So as I said, I'll do my best to answer the questions that you have.
Could you give us sort of a high-level summary of your findings?
Yes, of course. Our cohort is looking at exposure to toxic chemicals, that could be occupationally related. So we are looking at the study was looking at exposure to perfluoroalkyl alkyl substances, or PFASs. We found that the women firefighters in our study had higher levels of three different compounds compared to the non-firefighters in the study, and this was a statistically significant difference, and that everyone in our study was exposed to multiple different compounds, so both firefighters and office workers. Other research has documented high exposures among firefighting in general, PAHs, arsenic, formaldehyde, benzene, all these compounds that are known potential breast carcinogens. But our study focused on PFAS primarily at this point in time.
So PFAS is a carcinogenic, and I think I'm familiar with it, particularly as it relates to in the state of Alaska. We have a problem with a lot of PFAS in water, PFAS contamination of water as a result of using it in firefighting foams. Could you sort of describe for us what exposure for a professional firefighter or, other emergency personnel might look like and what results you may have found?
As you mentioned, PFAS is a big problem in water. We, in California, actually, at least in the Bay Area, we don't have the same levels of PFAS in drinking water, so we were able to exclude that as a potential source from our workers. So common exposures among firefighters include the aqueous firefighting foam, or AFFF foam, that firefighters frequently use. It is also suspected to be in their turnout gear or their protective equipment, so the gear that firefighters wear when they go out to fight fires. are water resistant and flame retardant, and they add PFAS to that fabric to give it those those properties. And we found that firefighter position might also be associated with PFAS levels. So firefighters who were assigned to the levels, to the position of officer or firefighter position, these are positions in which firefighters are more likely to go in and fight the fire directly. Those two groups had higher levels than firefighters who were assigned to driver positions. So people who go in and fight fire directly have higher exposure than those who provide support and backup and are driving the engines in the trucks. So we do find that there are some associations with specific occupation activities, and there are sources of exposure that are known for firefighting, specifically the gear and the firefighting foam.
So can you describe what that means in terms of increase in cancer rates or sort of causality?
That's a very tough question to answer. This ARC study is specifically an exposure study. We aren't following these participants over time right now to look at cancer rates for several reasons. One is most fire departments have very few numbers of women in their departments to have statistical power or enough women to really see a statistically significant association. So it might be present, but we don't have enough people to determine that with confidence. That's one. The other is that looking at a breast cancer outcome or looking at cancer outcomes can, in fact, hinder prevention efforts because you have to wait until cancer cases appear. So we are looking at exposure to chemicals that have been shown to be carcinogens. So there is a lot of evidence, both in animal and human studies, to show that PFAS is associated with breast cancer. And we found that we have higher exposures than the general population.
All right, thank you. Are there any other questions for Ms. Throbidge? Representative Hannon?
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to attempt the chair's question again, and I know that it drives scientists, and especially in the midst of research, crazy. So I'm going to ask you to speculate without looking, you know, maybe anecdotally, because certainly you've looked at the data more than us and maybe have talked to people. What is your speculation about time of exposure before onset of cancer? I know that in mice we're finding it. But are we thinking that a woman on the job as a firefighter after 5 years is likely to develop, or is it a 20-year? Or do you have any speculative hypothesis yet?
For PFOA specifically, or PFAS chemicals specifically, or?
Although I personally have an interest in the PFAS element, we're looking at all kinds of carcinogenic exposure in the bill we're looking at. We're specifically looking at workers' compensation,
right,
and cancers for firefighters, so it's not narrowed to just PFAS. But either way, what's your science and research lead you to speculate?
The biology, as you say, is very complicated, and being able to say a time frame between an exposure and an outcome would be very, very challenging, primarily because there isn't just one exposure, and the biology behind exposure isn't as straightforward. There are many factors involved. And also, there are other exposures beyond the occupational exposures. We're all exposed to multiple toxic compounds at home, as are firefighters. They have lives outside of the firehouse. So I know that's not precisely the answer that you want to hear. That said, when I have been looking at other presumption laws in other places, they have mostly cited 5 years for breast cancer. That's what I know.
Thank you.
All right. Are there any other questions for Ms. Throbidge? All right. Seeing none, thank you very much for your time today. I'm going to go ahead and open up public testimony on this bill at this time. Is there anybody in the room that wishes to testify on HB 84? All right. Seeing none, and there is nobody on the line as well who plans to testify. All right, with that, I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony for right now. We're going to set aside this bill for this committee hearing. Thank you very much to Representative Josephson and Ms. Sorenberg for your time today. Next up, we're going to move to HB 91. And we have lots of people who want to testify on this topic, so. All right, Representative Johnston and Ms. Schein, you put yourself on their record and give us a very brief recap. I understand you need to go soon, Representative Johnston.
Yes, I apologize, but thank you, Chair Sponholz and committee members, to have a hearing on this bill, SB 91. I just wanted to share with you why I feel this is an important bill. There's actually a family history as far as sort of progressive medical thoughts. My father-in-law was the driving force back, I'm not sure how many years ago, many, many years ago, as far as getting osteopaths hospital privileges. And Vermont was one of the first states to have hospital privileges for osteopaths. And I thought of it when our daughter blew out her ACL and the surgeon that operated on her was an osteopath. And I never once questioned his ability to be her surgeon. And he told me he put a huge tendon in because he knew that she was very active and needed more than just a normal one. Mm-hmm. And I felt great comfort in that. This bill, what this bill does is this gives Alaskans an affordable alternative to primary care. What we're looking for, folks, is we're looking to have our Alaskans healthy, and we want to make it something that they can all, as I say, afford. Naturopaths have the education education and training to provide the scope of the practice outlined in this bill. They have the education, have the prescriptive authority, and this prescriptive authority excludes controlled substances and chemo drugs. They have the education to perform minor surgery. I hope that you listen to this testimony. I hope that you find it in your, you find the will to pass the bill out. And thank you again for your time.
Thank you very much, Representative Johnston. Are there any questions for the bill sponsor, Ms. Schein, while we have them? Representative Stutz.
Yes, I had the opportunity to speak to Ms. Schein, and I think there's some issues that I was unsure about that she was able to reassure me, and a lot of it was on the prescription writing and the difference in some of the education. Anyway, if you could once again explain that to me so the whole committee could hear it.
Yeah, for the record, my name is Erin Schein, and I'm staff to Representative Johnston. Naturopathic doctors do have education and training. It's system-based education for pharmacology throughout their courses in their medical school. It's a four-year medical school, similar to medical doctors. However, they diverge in some of their training. One of the things that I would highlight for the difference between, for naturopaths, the education and training that they have is actually the same or actually more than certain health professionals that are actually practicing with a broader scope of practice that's even provided in this bill. That's not to say that those individuals aren't educated for that. I believe that nurse practitioners and physician's assistants are educated and trained to be able to do the things that they're doing. But I would also say that naturopaths also have that education and training, and this bill is not even asking for what they have. Nurse practitioners is a four-year degree, physician's assistants is a two, and these are doctoral level students that are coming out of naturopathic school that do have the education training to be able to perform the things that are asked in this legislation.
Just to clarify, nurse practitioners either have a master's degree or a doctorate at this point in time, so they have to do between 6 and 8 years of school to become a nurse practitioner.
Yes. Madam Chair, that's correct. I would think I was quoting the minimal level. Yes, there are advanced nurse practitioner degrees.
All right. Are there any other questions for Ms. Shine or Representative Johnston? All right, Representative Fields.
Thanks, through the chair. I guess I feel like I'm between a rock and a hard place because I want to support my colleague, but also have heard strong opposition from doctors who I trust. So I guess my question is, do you see any potential to come to a consensus that would kind of resolve what seems like strong support on one side and strong opposition on the other side? And I've heard from people who I respect on both sides, and that makes it a very hard decision.
Actually, I'm not sure. Is there a question? What was the question?
The question is, is there the opportunity for consensus on a narrower expansion of authority for naturopaths?
Actually, Representative Fields, I think this is quite narrow. I mean, you are excluding controlled substances. You're excluding chemo. This is allowing patients who go to a naturopath at their own choosing to, if they have a cold, that naturopath can give them what they might need for that cold. And I would say probably, because they're naturopaths, they're probably less likely to give them a prescribed prescription. Mm-hmm. So I don't see, I think we've already done that. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
My staff has distributed a list of a testimony summary. We've received 31 letters or emails of opposition and 116 in support. This is one of many sort of licensure discussions that we've had over the years as it relates to the expansion of healthcare practitioners in the state of Alaska, and each of them has been somewhat contentious in many respects, but I was pleased to see the large number of support, letters in support of this bill, and we have some public testimony that we'll be taking in a few moments as well. Representative Stutes.
Thank you. I just have a quick question. I know that we've heard people testify before on this bill, and they spoke about all these nightmarish things that have happened. Has there been any substantiation of those?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes. After the testimony that we heard last year, I did follow up with Division Director Sarah Chambers from the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing, and not one of those stories has been reported nor investigated in Alaska. It's quite possible those are stories that are coming from outside of Alaska in states that are unregulated. People can call themselves naturopaths. They can operate like a naturopath, and those stories, we've just never been able to substantiate any of those claims throughout the years that this has been a bill before the legislature.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Representative Story?
Yes, thank you. I have heard some concerns about how do naturopaths identify themselves differently from doctors. And I know we have the MD and the NP or after their names, but many people feel that people get mixed up and they feel seeing a naturopath is like they're seeing a doctor with the same level of training.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Representative Story, I did somewhat of a deep dive into other states and how they've actually outlined titles for naturopaths and other healthcare professionals. Of the states that regulate, there are many that put a prohibition on using the word physician. In this bill, it does remove the current prohibition from the 1986 statutes that were put in place. About the states are about 50-50 on that specific term, but other states that do allow naturopaths to call themselves naturopathic physicians also prescribe that they must identify that they are a naturopathic physician and not market themselves as just a physician to make sure that there is no confusion for the consumer or for the patient that's going to be seeing either one of these providers. It currently in the bill right now, it just removes the prohibition of using physician, but I would be happy to work with anyone on any language, or I believe we would, to be able to make sure that's a delineation between the two providers or between all of the healthcare professionals that are in Alaska to make sure that that's clear.
And just to clarify, the term doctor is actually short for doctorate, and there are many people who have doctorates There are different kinds of doctorates. You can have a doctorate of philosophy, which is a PhD. You can have a doctor of medicine, which makes you an MD. There's a lot of different kinds of doctor. And so we colloquially use it because primarily medical doctors have been the primary caregiver sort of historically, but that's no longer true. For example, even with nurse practitioners, for example, you can now get a doctorate of nurse, a doctorate of nurse practitioner. I think I'm just a little bit off on the naming there, and it's DNP, and you are in fact a doctor, but you are a doctor in the tradition of nursing, which is different. And so it may be that we're also in a moment where the nomenclature is evolving as practice and education has changed. Do you have any further questions, Representative Story?
No, thank you. I'll look for that section in here and think about if I want to make an amendment.
All right. Oh, Representative Hannon.
Thank you. And through the chair, Ms. Schein, in your, and I do see Ms. Chambers in the room, so if it's, I am curious in the deep dive into either complaints about it or concerns. We've regulated naturopathic doctors, naturopaths in Alaska since 1986. And I am curious whether we've had very low volume of concerns about their licensing and ability to keep up with their licensure requirements, or
I think we'll call up Ms. Chambers if that's all right.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, thank you very much. All right, Ms. Chambers. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Sarah Chambers, Director of the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing. And through the Chair, Representative Hannon, we really do not see a lot of problems with licensed naturopaths. I believe, if I remember from the last hearing, I apologize, I don't have it in front of me today, but we average about 7 investigations every 10 years. And we only had one complaint last year, and it was not even followed through with. So it wasn't even at the beginning stages of an investigation. This is not a problematic profession the way that it's currently structured.
Follow up.
And of the professional licensure boards that you currently oversee, how many of them include prescriptive authority?
So through the Chair, Representative Hannon, right now, the Medical Board, Board of Nursing, Board of Dental Examiners, Board of Veterinary Examiners, Board of Examiners in Optometry, they can all prescribe.
Follow up.
And do you have any sense of how often you have investigations of a disciplinary nature in those entities? The prescription has been one of the large areas where we've heard feedback of, you know, suddenly we're going to have people dead on the streets of Alaska because they got antibiotics for an ear infection from a naturopath. And I'm just trying to see whether we've got, you know, whether we're seeing prescription problems of that kind of nature, or if this is a legitimate concern that we're going to add a group and we're suddenly going to have huge issues around prescriptive medicine being administered in ways that we've never seen before?
That's a great question through the Chair, Representative Hannon. So two things. One is that there is a lot of concern in the nation in general over controlled substances. Mm-hmm. We're having a lot of spirited conversations in another committee around the prescription drug monitoring program. When I offered to be a technical assistance to the sponsor, helping to do some of the technical aspects, we looked at the sponsor was very clear that there's not an intent, nor is there anything in the bill that would give naturopaths even the illusion of being able to prescribe controlled substances. And I walked through with Ms. Schein the raft of additional statutes that would need to go into place if that was, you know, there's so many protections. We don't have with other prescribing boards rampant antibiotic prescribing discipline. What we have seen with this program is that we have the problem that I think is one of the things this bill is trying to accomplish. Naturopaths are gaining in their education. They're getting training to do the things that the bill wants to do. And we have had investigations where naturopaths are doing what's within the scope of their education, and there may or may not even be harm to a patient, but the current laws don't allow them to do it. So there has been confusion among the naturopath practitioners that they're trained, people want it, there's no harm, but they're not allowed to do it. So we have investigated that, and this would kind of match up the state law with their training.
Great. Answers my concerns.
Further questions? Representative Story.
Yes, I thank you. I haven't heard so much that people would be over prescribing something, but the concern a lot from the medical profession has been that because not having the depth of experience, they might not see an underlying issue that is happening as if they weren't seeing a doctor who had had more experience. So just wanted to share that comment.
All right. Ms. Chambers, you said about seven investigations over the last 10 years, and then you said one complaint last year, but it wasn't followed through on. And I was wondering if you could elaborate on what you meant by that.
Sure. So in our investigative process, the first step is for someone to file a complaint. The complaint can be anything. It can be something that is jurisdictional, relates to statutes and regulations. It can be that they just didn't like the way somebody acted, that they wouldn't take an appointment, that it could be anything. We require the complainant to fill out a short description of what their complaint is, their name, the name of the licensee that the complaint is about, mm-hmm. and submit that to our office. That process, that first step, was not even completed. If it had been completed, then we would have analyzed the complaint to see, is it jurisdictional? Sometimes people think that we have jurisdiction over things that we don't, like bedside manner. We can't make our licensees be personable. So, you know, things like that. Sometimes they're, you know, serious complaints against our licensees. And so we graduate the investigation up to include a board member if it gets further along where there is a board. We have 21 boards. We have 22 professions, including healthcare professions, that do not have boards. And so we in those cases, we call on an expert witness to say, you know, you're a licensed behavior analyst, just calling out a profession that doesn't have a board, and we need your expertise and practice on this. They sign a confidentiality agreement, go through the rules, do a conflict check, and then they kind of become part of that analytical team. And then if there is determined to be a potential violation, strong evidence, then it would either go to the board for a deliberation or me as the director to go to deliberation in place of a board. Again, that's a long, drawn-out process. It's very thorough. And in the case of the one complaint that we had last year, that complaint was not – the one-page paper was not even – completely filled out. So there was nothing to pursue. The person dropped it or lost interest, or it wasn't serious enough for them to take seriously.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And with that, I think we will go ahead and move on to public testimony. We have quite a few people that are interested in testifying. There's one person in the room, and I think we'll invite up Alex Malter now. And then after that, we'll go to people that are on the line. There's quite a queue of people that are waiting.
Madam Chair Spondholz, committee members, thank you. For the record, my name is Alex Malter, and I certainly appreciate the opportunity to speak with you all today. My purpose in testifying is to respectfully urge the committee to not support expansion of naturopath privileges or naturopath scope of practices proposed under House Bill 91. These changes respectfully would not enhance patient care, nor would they improve Alaskans' access to care. As a little bit of back.
Mr. Malter, I'm sorry. I apologize. I should have said, we have a timeline. We want it, our committee completes at 5:15 on Friday afternoon, and there is about 15 other people that are slated to testify. So I'm going to give you 4 minutes.
No problem. Right. Thank you. As a bit of background, I've been a practicing internal medicine physician in Juneau for more than 25 years. Prior to that, I trained and practiced in public health in Washington State. During my time in Alaska, I've had multiple opportunities to review whether it would be safe and appropriate to expand naturopath's scope of practice here. First, when similar bills were being considered by the legislature more than a decade ago, I was appointed to an Alaskan task force set up to determine whether and how naturopath's scope might be safely expanded. After thoroughly reviewing data regarding the amount and type of education naturopaths received, legislator proponents back then reconsidered their attempts to forward such bills, apparently concluding from that task force discussion that expanding naturopath scopes might be unsafe and would not substantially benefit Alaskans. More recently, I served as Medicaid medical director for the state of Alaska for 10 years. As you know, that program focuses on safe and effective ways to improve quality and access to care for beneficiaries, and in that role, I kept apprised of proposals to expand naturopath scope of practice, as well as the safety and quality concerns raised by opponents to those proposals. Based on this background, I've come to believe that, for multiple reasons, medical care in Alaska would not be enhanced by expanding naturopath scope of practice, nor would patient access be improved. First, medical training for naturopaths is less rigorous than that for MDs, both in time and in length and depth. Its emphasis on alternative healing does not allow adequate time for students to fully study the accepted pathology and physiology so as to safely treat most medical conditions. As a group, MDs don't believe that the first two didactic years of naturopath school and medical school are comparable. Just because programs may offer courses with the same name doesn't imply that the course content is the same. But even if the didactic years of schooling were similar, medical students are still required to spend an additional 4+ years in clinical training and residency before being licensed in the state of Alaska. Naturopaths do not enter these allopathic residencies, and the last years of their training emphasize alternative treatments, not the use of prescriptions. Thus, while physicians are only licensed after a minimum of 6+ years of training, including 4 specifically focused on the appropriate and safe use of prescriptions, under HB 91, naturopaths could be licensed to prescribe with at least 2 years less training, less of that training being focused on relevant pharmaceutical treatments. Parenthetically, coming back to the advanced nurse practitioner discussion earlier, while ANPs and PAs do prescribe with less than 6 years of training, the training they do get is focused singularly on allopathic methodology and approaches, similar to medical doctors. Second, safety concerns for children seem particularly concerning to me. While it may be reasonable for adults to make decisions to seek out alternative treatments, children aren't able to make those informed decisions themselves. Thus, if a parent takes a child into an alternative provider who gives an untested remedy, the child may be subjected to non-standard or potentially dangerous treatment. I have an example that makes me a little bit biased. I'm hesitant to bring it up because I understand you all have been uneasy hearing some of these anecdotal examples, but suffice it to say, I had a bad enough experience with a patient who came to me after seeing a naturopath that, for better or for worse, it biased me. And then lastly, I want to say it seems unlikely that expanding scope for naturopaths will actually improve access to care for the underserved. My impression is that few naturopaths practice in those rural areas in which access issues are most critical. Rather, most seem to be working in the population centers that are already having better access to care. So for these and other reasons, I urge you to respectfully vote no on House Bill 91, and I thank you for your attention.
All right, thank you. Right under the wire, well done. Are there any questions for the testifier? All right, seeing none, Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair. I guess it's not really a question, but I am gonna declare the bias and conflict. Dr. Malter has been my primary care physician for about 25 years.
All right.
And he is a constituent, but that does not mean I always listen to his advice.
Fair enough. All right, thank you. All right, next we are going to go on to the AFNA, and first up we have Catherine Brown.
Hello?
Ms. Brown, proceed with your testimony.
Oh, thank you. My name is Catherine Brown. I'm a five-generation Junoite and great-niece of Dora Sweeney, an elected delegate to the State Constitutional Convention. She represented Juneau from 55 to 65 in territorial and state legislatures. Anyway, naturopaths do receive the same training as medical doctors for the first 2 years of their education. Only after that point do they turn to natural medicine. They are therefore fully qualified to function as primary care physicians and able to competently perform minor surgeries, prescribe certain medications, order testing, and so forth. In light of the above, we should be asking ourselves, how is the public served by limiting naturopathic medicine? Healthcare costs and lack of access to medical care are huge problems for Alaska and key drivers in increasing Alaska's budget. Not taking advantage of the full capacities of Alaska's naturopathic physicians, in my view, is madness, particularly in light of the increasing prevalence of chronic and preventable diseases. I'm also recently learned that Indian Health Service has funding available for students training in naturopathic medicine, but we're unable to take advantage of that because of our limited scopes here in Alaska. So we have to ask, who is advantaged by this limitations? So if you believe in the free market system, then you probably also believe that government shouldn't be picking winners and losers without a compelling public interest. Naturopaths have completed all nationally required training and education and shouldn't be limited in any way, particularly since medical professionals with far less education are currently allowed greater scope of practice in this state. So disadvantaging naturopathic physicians by limiting their scope of practice derails our freedom of choice. And I know there's a lot of unsubstantiated scary stories out there advanced by those with an economic interest in limitation. And this can probably be countered in equal measure by stories on the other side of the issue. However, if they're not documented and legally reported as required by law, they have no place in the present discussion. My own lived experience with naturopathic care has been extremely positive. I am a survivor of life-threatening illness with excellent prognosis going forward, and I credit this entirely to the naturopathic support and care I received throughout my illness. All Alaskans should have access to this kind of care if they so choose. I ask the committee and the chairman to please pass this bill out with a due pass. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Brown? All right. Is there a question? Nope. Seeing none, we're going to move on to our next testifier, Dr. Marianne Folland.
Hello?
Hello. Go ahead and put yourself on the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, this is Dr. Marianne Folland. I'm a family physician in Anchorage and have been since 1977, and I oppose the expansion of scope of practice. We've addressed this issue over and over. It has been and remains a really bad idea. It's important to know this absolutely is not a turf issue, a workforce or access of care issue. There's a limited number of naturopaths in the state, and most of them practice in populated areas, as Dr. Malter said. Many people think you go to medical school and you can choose to be a neurosurgeon or a naturopath. Simply not true. You have access to policy statements from the American Academy of Family Physicians, the Alaska Academy of Family Physicians, the Alaska State Medical Association, and the AMA. The state medical board has also opposed this bill every time, and they feel that these changes are the practice of allopathic medicine, and they feel it's not appropriate and not safe for the public. I do have many stories that I promise you are substantiated, and I have no economic interest in them, and I will forward them to you in writing. There's one I wanted to share that really sends chills up my spine. I know of a physician who was distraught to tell a patient the tissue she was losing vaginally was positive for endometrial cancer. This is a really late sign for progression of that disease. However, he was shocked that the patient was happy because the treatment that her naturopath was giving her was working and allowing her body to expel the cancer cells. That is chilling. Some of the minor surgeries may include things like cataract surgery, circumcision, breast biopsy, arthroscopy, laparoscopy. The bill would allow them to prescribe potentially dangerous pharmaceuticals that may include cardiac antiarrhythmics, antipsychotics, blood thinners, or immunosuppressants. There are medications that in high doses are chemotherapy drugs, but in low doses are used to treat different kinds of arthritis. The bill would allow naturopaths to prescribe contraceptive devices, which are implanted under the skin or inside the uterus. Those carry the risk of infection and uterine perforation, even in the hands of well-experienced OBGYN docs or family docs. It would allow naturopaths to order diagnostic procedures such as amniocentesis, bone marrow aspiration, cerebral angiography, spinal tap. Those things are really a concern. I'm sure you'll hear from many patients who love their naturopaths. I think that's great, but it really is not pertinent. Naturopaths don't need to have prescriptive or surgical privileges. Let them please continue to be naturopaths in practice within the definition of naturopathy. This relentless quest is the camel's nose under the tent for the issue of scope of practice. Please act to protect the health and safety of our Alaskan patients and do not pass this bill. Thank you.
Dr. Folan, did you report the naturopath in question?
No, I did not. I heard about it from the physician who was telling the patient the results of her endometrial biopsy or of her endometrial tissue. I do know of one of the cases that was investigated by the board because the investigator called me in my position from the Physicians Health Program. I work with the State Medical Board in consultation about a naturopath who did have a complication injecting phenol for back pain. None of the specialists I know would ever consider doing this, but the patient had a collapsed lung and had to be hospitalized for a chest tube. The naturopath who did that repeated that procedure and collapsed another patient's lung as well. That was, I know the name of that naturopath. I'm going to decline to say that. But the investigator from the state board had called and asked my opinion about that, and I helped research it for them.
Do you have a question? Representative Hannon.
Through the chair. Was the endometrial cancer case that you mentioned here in Alaska, was this a naturopath performing in Alaska?
Yes.
And the second one that you know the name of was also an Alaska case?
Yes.
And do you know why in the first case that it was not reported? Do doctors not have a legal duty to report if they know of medical incompetence? If they encounter that in their course of action of treating a patient, that someone, a previous provider, has inappropriately treated them, do they have a duty to report that?
I think that the reports to the State Medical Board and to the Grievance Committee for the State Medical Association need to come from the patient and not from another physician. And one of our physicians sitting right here behind me used to be on the State Medical Board and is nodding his head. Has to come from a patient. And that patient was happy.
All right, we have somebody in the room who can answer that question. Ms. Chambers, can you come up and answer the question as to whether or not a report needs to come from a doctor? Thank you very much for your testimony, Dr. Folan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, this is Sarah Chambers, Director of the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing. And anyone can file a complaint. Some healthcare professions do have a requirement to report things like sexual abuse, child abuse. I don't believe that there is a requirement to report on someone who has performed a medical procedure or that didn't work out. I mean, we would have far more investigations than we do now because I think every one of us has experienced something along like that line. Mm-hmm. But as far as the direct question, anyone can file a complaint. Anyone can bring it to our attention. And we would do the investigation, talk to the patient, talk to the doctor, do those interviews, and get to the bottom of it. Mm-hmm. If the patient didn't want to cooperate, that would be his or her choice. But at this point, if it's not reported, we can't give them that opportunity.
Yeah, thank you. I think that that's really an important thing to get on the record, that if, in fact, there are people that are practicing healthcare in an unsafe manner, that we have a process by which we all have a responsibility, but I would especially expect healthcare providers to take action on that and in order to ensure that the public is safe. All right, next up on the invited public testimony is Dr. Patrick Nolan.
I'm a board-certified internist, endocrinologist in Anchorage, and been here since 1977. I served on the state board under Governor Cooper and Governor Hickel for a period of time, and Tom Connolly was the chairman at that time. Having heard lots of different testimony about doctors, about different kinds of people involved in the practice of medicine, I am speaking against this bill. And for several reasons. Number one, please do not associate osteopaths with, or even come close to associating osteopaths with naturopaths. It's a totally different spectrum of medicine. The osteopaths spent years and years changing their practice and changing their education to comply with the AMA and the AMA approved institutions. So the osteopathic schools are literally equal, and all of the residencies, or almost all the residencies in the United States and even abroad, are open to osteopathic physicians. I know because I am one, and I trained at a medical institution, a combined osteopathic and medical institution, so they're very common around the country, and they hold the same standards as all medical doctors. So don't confuse those. The naturopathic physicians do not have the same education as the osteopathic or allopathic physicians. It's not even close. I spent 16,000 hours in training after my internship in Ohio, and I was in Cleveland Clinic in Michigan during my internal medicine and training in endocrinology. I'm board certified in both. I would agree that the naturopath should stick with naturopathy and not extend out into allopathic or osteopathic prescriptive drugs. The reason is they aren't adequately trained. That's the main reason. It's analogous to having a private pilot and his little cub want to fly 747s without training. It's analogous to that kind of a thing. It's that different. And so I would it's just highly unlikely that they're going to be successful in prescribing drugs, just medicines that we use. And I would suggest that if anybody wants to prescribe drugs in this kind of a realm, that they should be required to take the same examinations in pharmacology and in surgery that I had to take. Although I'm not a surgeon, I did do some surgery, but I had to take some courses and also pass some examinations in surgical techniques, things like that, that I'm sure the naturopaths haven't had to do. And this should be required if they're going to be doing it. They also should be mentored, and they should be proctored in all of those things, including the prescription of drugs. There's at least 7 new classes of diabetic drugs, anti-diabetic drugs. There's many new classes of cancer, of anti-cancer drugs, anti-neoplastic drugs. And many of these drugs cross over in their treatment. A good example, the new SGLT2 drugs that are used for diabetes are also now used for heart failure. And this crosses the line of different specialties. The cancer drugs frequently are used for other kinds of purposes, such as rheumatology and cancer. So to just say prescribing cancer drugs is wrong because they can use other drugs for other purposes that are also used as anti-cancer drugs. So this has to be defined much better than it is, if that was even going to be considered in that particular realm. So I would strongly, the complexity of medicine has increased in the last 40 years of my practice tremendously and requires yearly update on the practice of medicine, much less other form and practice of my medicine, much less other specialties. So this is a multi-specialty group, and the family doctors have gone through all of the major specialties in their training, something that if naturopaths want to do, they would need to go through medical training and all the subspecialties.
All right, that's your time, Dr. Nolan. Thank you very much. All right, next up we have Dr. Renee Mercuris. I'm sorry for, I'm sure, butchering your name there.
It's Greek.
Thank you.
Anyways, My name is Ray McCurris. I'm an OB-GYN here in Anchorage, Alaska, and I have been on the asthma board for a while, and I'm speaking against House Bill 91. The reason I am is if you look at the definition of naturopath, according to the Oxford Dictionary, it is a system of alternative medicine based on the theory that diseases can be successfully treated or prevented without use of drugs by techniques such as control of diet, exercise, and massage. And we go back to the accreditation of what medical schools and residency have. They have standardized tests during medical school, during residency, and at the end of graduation. Even in the next 2 years in practice, they still have to pass another test that guarantees that for that specialty, that no matter if you went to DO school, MD school, or where you went, even if you were from a foreign school, that you had to pass these tests that guarantee that you have a base of knowledge. Naturopaths do not have these types of tests. And in comparison, a naturopath, this is a study done by the American Medical Association, a naturopath, when he starts to practice, it's a four-year program, they spend 720 to 1,200 hours. A physician, MD or DO, will spend, at the time that they start to practice, 12,000 to 16,000 hours. There's just, I'm sorry, no comparison on about the ability to diagnose disease, to diagnose, to do surgery, or to use medication. As an individual, I also have been here for 20 years practicing in Alaska. I had a patient with insulin-dependent diabetes. She's been an insulin-dependent diabetic since she was a teenager, and she came to me for pregnancy. Her family does believe very strongly in naturopathic medicine, so she came in using cinnamon to treat her insulin-dependent diabetes. At that time, her blood sugar was 600, which is six times the normal, and usually we admit people into the hospital so they don't die of diabetic ketoacidosis. Running your sugars this high for an pregnant woman is a known cause of fetal malformations, fetal death, and it increases the permanent injury to the maternal kidney, eye, and organ systems. It's for these reasons, I believe the access of care, I guess what is not an issue, and I believe that naturopathic physicians do have a place, but I also think that's what they should do, and they shouldn't be treating with surgery and medications. So they really don't have the training. I speak strongly against House Bill 91 for these reasons. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony today. Are there any questions? All right, seeing none, we'll go open to Dr. John DeKaiser.
This is John. Hi, this is John DeKaiser. I'm an MD, moved to Anchorage, Alaska in 1984, board certified in family practice, and then later in OBGYN, and I'm here to speak against House Bill 91. It's one of the items in House Bill 91 was allowing a temporary license for the naturopath before he passed his test. I would liken this to somebody taking a driver ed class and then getting a temporary driver's license even before passing the test. So that's just a small aside that just doesn't make any sense to me. The naturopaths pass a board, a test called the Naturopathic Physician's Licensing Exam, that's abbreviated NPLX. The board that administers the NPLX doesn't allow that testing to be evaluated by allopathic medicine to see what's in it or how it qualifies, as opposed to the test that the allopathic physicians need to pass. So it's not really known what's in it. One example in their study guide that was for the NPLX exam that's published is a mother calls in frantic that her young child has a severe cough and is gasping for air, and what an allopathic physician would do is say, you know, get the child to the emergency room. But the correct answer, according to the NPLX study guide, is, well, run through a list of homeopathic remedies that you could do with the child before bringing the child that's gasping for air to the emergency room. So it's, that's one example that's just really doesn't make any sense to me. One of the things naturopaths like to say is that they treat the whole person, as if to say allopathic physicians don't treat the whole person. Well, I'd say that traditional physicians do treat the whole person, including the symptoms. The allopaths, they say they don't treat just the symptoms, they treat the whole person. Well, allopathic physicians treat the whole person, including the symptoms, and learn from those symptoms and address the cause of those symptoms, including treating the whole person. From Wikipedia, I learned of a naturopathic physician named Britt Marie Hermes, who was born in California, graduated from naturopathic school in 2011, and practiced naturopathy for about 4 years until she just became disenchanted with it because she saw so many illegal and unethical treatments of cancer patients and other practices, poor education, low professional standards. She made a report to the Arizona authorities regarding Michael Uzak for administering non-FDA-approved substances, and he was called on the carpet by the board because of that. And that's all I have to say. Thank you for your time.
All right. Are there any questions for Dr. DeKaiser? All right. Seeing none, thank you. Next up, we've got Dr. Graham Glass. Dr. Glass? All right, you might have us on mute. I'm going to give you one more chance, and then we'll move on to the next person. All right, moving on to Dr. Jeffrey Demain.
I appreciate the opportunity. Good morning, Madam Chair. This is Dr. Jeff Demain. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. I first want to just comment that naturopaths provide a good service, and I think they do enhance the wellness of patients, and I do believe they treat the whole person. I co-manage patients with naturopaths. However, I oftentimes see patients that are diagnosed inaccurately, and the therapies and the approaches to diagnosis and management is inconsistent with evidence-based principles. In fact, they're truly counter to scientific evidence and standard of care. As a result of this, I feel patients that either misdiagnose and mismanage completely, or their diagnosis is significantly delayed. I've seen patients with this unnecessary delay of implementing appropriate care, and then you're really trying to catch up, so to speak, to get them clear. And oftentimes patients really love their naturopath, and I think that's wonderful. But they're so committed to a therapy that's inappropriate, it takes a lot of time to really kind of redirect them in a more appropriate management. We are talking about education. You know, it's not just a four-year medical school, as you know. I've had 9 years of training, and not only are we board certified, I'm double board certified, like Dr. Nolan mentioned, but we have to continue to do what's called maintenance of certification. So our certification is redone every 10 years, but there's criteria to pass every year that we're in. It's constant. We're doing it all the time. So it's not like we do something at the end of 4 years and we're free to go. The more specialized we get, we start learning what we don't know. I wouldn't dare treat a diabetic patient. I haven't done that since my residency. So I let endocrinologists do that. You know, we can't be broad and treat everything. I think sometimes the less you know, the more you think you can do. And you start realizing that the more we know, the less we really know. So I certainly know allergy immunology, but again, I don't try to cross the lines. But we do treat the whole patient, and we work very cooperatively with each other. So I would like to just appeal to this committee to not pass HB 91. I think it would actually put Alaskans at risk, and it will certainly not add to any shortage of healthcare in our state nor will it provide a stopgap, so to speak, in some of the areas where we have most significant shortages, such as the rural areas. So I would, again, appeal to you to not pass HB 91.
All right. Representative Hannon has a question for you, Dr. Demain.
Dr. Demain, do you ever find misdiagnoses amongst your patients from previous traditional medical doctors who've then referred someone to you?
That's a good question. I've certainly, you know, they've been treated, diagnosed, and maybe that needs more intense evaluation. So, yes, I think, you know, there are times, it's not really a misdiagnosis as it is managing one aspect or managing some symptoms when there's really a more underlying problem at hand. So an example would be someone that's having recurrent infections, appropriately managing those infections, but then you know, when you start looking at the pattern, the infections are frequent or more serious or unusual, and the patient has an immune deficiency. But I'm a consultant, so the doctors appropriately send those patients to me, and I could probably look at it and say, well, this is delayed a little bit, but that's just a matter of someone's judgment. So ultimately, they're referred, ultimately, they're diagnosed, and ultimately, we're going to manage them. So I wouldn't say misdiagnosis, no. That's infrequent. You know, what some of the things that concern me about naturopaths is they're actually counter to scientific evidence. Some of the techniques like measuring IgG levels for food allergy. Well, they tell people they're allergic to 20 different foods and restrict their diet. Well, IgG is normal. It's appropriate to have IgG levels to foods. So based on that principle, 100% of the population has a food allergy. By the time I see patients, they're losing weight, they're unhealthy, and because they've had such food restriction and they have significant anxiety, and it takes a long time to get those foods back in their diet. For one thing, because of the anxiety that they've developed. That would be just two examples. I hope that answers your question.
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much for your time today, Dr. Demain.
Thanks.
All right. Next up, we have Annette O'Connell. Ms. O'Connell? All right, next up we're going to go to Dr. Roland Gower. Dr. Gower, are you on the line? All right, we're going to move on to Dr. Amy Cyberlich.
Hi, I'm here.
All right, proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Dr. Amy Cyberlich. I'm a naturopathic doctor. I live in Fairbanks, Alaska, and I support HB 91. I grew up in Fairbanks with dreams of being a doctor, but moved out of state for college and spent a decade in the Navy. After my tour in Afghanistan in 2013, I realized I still wanted to be a doctor, but I saw my dad, a Fairbanks resident for over 35 years and also a veteran, getting sicker and sicker with more doctors and prescriptions, but never any lasting improvement. I was really impressed with the naturopathic principles of identify and treat the cause and focus on prevention and education. So I applied to an accredited naturopathic medical school and helped my dad clean up his diet. In 3 months, he was down 40 pounds and needed less blood pressure and pain medication, and I was convinced. When I graduated in 2018, I hadn't considered moving back to Alaska, but after shadowing my now employer in Fairbanks, I started to think maybe it would be a good place to start my new career, raise a family, and help my dad get healthy for retirement. Naturopathic residencies are limited in availability and location, and it was scary foregoing a residency and moving somewhere that I can't prescribe. If it weren't for my dad being in Fairbanks, I wouldn't have come back. But I'm so glad I did. I absolutely love my job. I specialize in weight loss with a slant towards food addiction. In 2019, I helped 3 patients lose over 100 pounds each, and dozens more lose between 20 and 80 pounds. Like other NDs, I do this through finding and treating underlying medical conditions, a whole foods diet, targeted nutrient replacement, and a lot of counseling. No bars, shakes, shots, or surgeries. I'm very good at this and regularly receive referrals from cardiologists, urologists, an OBGYN, and an endocrinologist in Fairbanks who need their patients to lose weight but just don't have the time or tools to help it stick. Along with the weight loss, I regularly see blood pressures drop by 40 points, cholesterol levels decreased by half and blood sugars normalized within a matter of weeks. But because of the current scope, I have to refer these patients to someone else to manage their medications. Many of these patients are also on supplements, many self-prescribed and some recommended by naturopathic doctors. We are highly trained in medication management with 2 years of supervised clinical patient care of patients of all ages, and we are tested on licensing boards on pharmacology and drug-herb interactions. We also have a strong record of safe prescriptive rights in 14 states. Referring these patients out of our care increases their risk of being over-medicated and having drug-herb interactions and increases their cost due to multiple copays. Like other MDs, I'm trained to manage these medications, and if I practice in Washington, Oregon, California, or a number of other states, I could easily and safely do so. This discrepancy costs Alaska qualified primary care providers who choose to practice elsewhere under their full scope. This lowers healthcare access, lowers competition, and drives up costs. HB 91 seeks to correct this, and I encourage you to pass it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Seiberlich. I appreciate it. It always makes my heart sing to hear about Alaskans going outside for education and then coming home. Are there any questions for Dr. Seiberlich? All right. Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony today. Next up, we have Dr. Adam Grove.
Hi, yes, this is Adam Grove. I'm a naturopath practicing in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm also certified as a brain injury specialist by the Brain Injury Association of America. I've been practicing for 18 years here in Anchorage after spending 13 years in the military. When I graduated, I came to back to Anchorage, where I was from, and I made a self-made residency because back in that day, it was difficult to get residencies as a naturopathic student. I spent 12 years working in a clinic with very, I should say experienced naturopaths who've been in the state for many, many years, and then I've started my own practice. I want to tell you a little story. You may not realize the extent to which naturopaths practice. So I've been on the board of the Alaska Brain Injury Network for many years. I've been the chairman for many years. And I started a program which we call the Brain Injury Outreach Clinic because we recognize that in Alaska, we lead the nation in the number of traumatic brain injuries. We have numbers like 10,000 people or more living in the state with a brain injury, 610 hospitalized every year, vast numbers of people who never go to the hospital because in Western Alaska, where the brain injuries are the most prevalent, there is no hospital. So we started this program, and what we do is we get volunteer practitioners of all sorts to go out to the villages, and we provide education, assessment, and recommendations for treatment for people with brain injuries. We have not ever seen a DO or an MD even interested in this. We go to the regional hubs. Nobody in the hospital is interested in treating brain injury. They don't understand brain injury. It's very complex. And since Dr. Murphy left Providence in 2016, there has been nobody in the state who is a qualified, board-certified brain injury specialist. So we took this on. I've been from Uktavik to the north to Ketchikan to the south. In many villages, seen hundreds of people with brain injury, done a lot of training. And as a result, we are increasing access to people who have no care for brain injury. We do this in a very thorough way because of our education. I can deal with the psychological aspects, the diet aspects, the sleep, the neurologic aspects. And if I can't, I refer. I refer a lot to other MDs, DOs, naturopaths, OTs, PTs. And the other problem I run into in these rural areas is difficult to practice there because without prescriptive rights, I can't manage medications and I can't provide the guidance to people that are on medications that perhaps are quite bad for them with brain injury. Brain injury is a complex issue, and a lot of medications that are prescribed by prescribers who are not familiar with brain injury are actually doing harm, and trying to get those people off the medication is difficult if I don't have prescriptive rights to manage those medications. Even in Anchorage, where I do practice, we have a very big shortage of people who are smart about brain injury. I see people all the time now in my practice, which is pretty much centered on brain injury now, who have been to neurologists and primary care providers who are not providing good care, and in some cases providing bad care. And so there was one MD in Anchorage who was actually quite good with brain injury, and I used to refer to him until he lost his license to practice due to some substance abuse issues and other complaints. So What I'm saying is that naturopaths, because of our training, our in-depth ability to deal with patients across all sorts of different aspects of the human sort of disease process, we can provide care for very complex issues like brain injury. And that's not being done by the providers. When I go out to a village, I don't see an MD or DO standing up and saying, hey, I'm here to treat brain injury, and I kind of know what I'm doing about it. I don't see them. They're not there. And so I think when people say NDs are not in rural areas, yeah, it's hard to practice in a rural area if you don't have prescriptive rights. And do we provide access to patients and provide service to patients who are not getting it otherwise? Yes, indeed we do. And this is just one example of how we do this.
Dr. Grove, you've come up on your 4 minutes.
Exactly. So I would urge you to pass this bill on. Naturopaths are a valuable asset to this state, and expanding our privileges to manage medication through prescriptions is essential. So thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony today, and thank you also to you for bringing some education back with you home to Alaska. Dr. Doug Vermillion.
Hi, this is Doug Vermillion. I'm an orthopedic surgeon in Anchorage, Alaska, and I am a medical doctor, and I go to see naturopath Cameron O'Connell. She is very good, and she knows medicine. She's had a good education. My point is this. I'm having trouble getting patients cleared for surgery to make sure they're optimized, and they're not enough primary carers. My patients don't have a primary care doctor in many cases. I think for the benefit of the residents of the state, I think more access to primary care needs to be available. As far as being credentialed and things like that, you can work that out. I think it's a problem that if you think it's a problem, you can make sure that the requirements are there are stringent, and that the different variants of school, you may want to have an upper level of education for that. But I think there's a real need out there for citizens of the state to have additional access to primary care, and many of these people are very, very good. So that's all I have to say.
All right. Are there any questions for Dr. Vermillion? All right, an allopathic doctor who supports naturopaths. Thank you. All right, next up is Dr. Joshua Green.
Hello, this is Dr. Joshua Green.
All right, proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. It is an honor to speak to you. I am a naturopathic physician in the state of Vermont. I am speaking as an individual, but just so that you know, I am the president of the Vermont Association of Naturopathic Physicians. Really quickly, I'll just list some information for you that I think would be helpful to make your decisions, and I trust that you'll make the right ones. And I am calling in support of HB 91. We have been licensed in Vermont as naturopathic physicians since 1996. We had a formulary that was similar to what you're looking at in HB 91 since 2009. And we have had open prescribing rights similar to MDs, DOs, NPs, and dentists since 2015, 2016. We've had zero official complaints since. Our Commissioner of Health, Dr. Harry Chen, back in 2013, addressed a concern brought up by a senator, similar to what we've been hearing, saying, why do MDs need to prescribe? Dr. Harry Chen, who was our Commissioner of Health, said, they are primary care providers, and they need the tools of prescriptive medicine to provide care for patients. And that I think that there won't be a problem. Every prescription a doctor writes gets reviewed by a pharmacist. I'm in support of the regulation, and I think that our Office of Professional Regulation in Vermont will carefully consider to ensure safety. What else did I want to say to you? Regarding many of the claims that I've heard tonight, I want to say that I greatly appreciate the passion and concern that many of the physicians here have put forth so far in their opposition to HB 91. Unfortunately, while their opinions are absolutely valid, their claims have not been valid. We as naturopathic physicians do not do arthroscopy or any of the surgeries that they mentioned. I don't even know where that information came from. I do not know if any of the stories they told are true. But even if they are, any physician with any degree who does something wrong can and should be tried by a jury of their peers. That is why we have governments, laws, and judges. I don't think it's a reason to not support HB 91. In Vermont, we NDs practice as primary care providers. We have a wonderful track record. We use conventional medical diagnosis and with every patient, we are assessing the need for pharmaceutical prescribing during that visit, whether it is appropriate or not. We are trained additionally in botanical medicine and homeopathy and diet and lifestyle counseling, which is something I cannot say for other physicians, and I think it makes us wonderful doctors. And other physicians aren't wonderful doctors because they don't have that, but we have the ability to use all of those tools all at once. We refer to specialists as appropriate. We have a patient care shortage in Vermont, and naturopaths have made a huge effect on shoring up patient care in underserved areas and rural areas, especially as most of us take all Vermont-based insurances. In my clinic, we see have about 40% Medicaid patients, and some ND practices have well over 50%, and we are about 85% insurance-based. Again, we are trying to help Vermonters and fill in that need. Ironically, to the family medicine doctor who was board certified in obstetrics, in my clinic, many of our patients are actually coming to see us because their MDs or DOs did not diagnose properly the symptoms that they had, so they came to see us. They told the doctors that there are symptoms, and those docs missed the symptoms. Missed the diagnosis, but only heard the symptoms. They were either told that the top things we hear are take some antidepressants, take gabapentin, or a low-dose prednisone. Because I
can't
prescribe those drugs. Yes.
That's your 4 minutes. You want to wrap it up?
Oh, yes. I'm so sorry. We do refer a lot to other specialists as appropriate and get referred by other specialists. I'm very thankful to give testimony and be able to have open prescribing rights in Vermont. I do hope that you as a state are open to that, and thank you again for your time.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Green. Just for the record, the bill as proposed would not allow for open prescribing rights in the state of Alaska. Next up is Dr. Courtney Bowers.
Hi, this is Dr. Courtney Bowers. Can you hear me?
Sure can. Go ahead.
Great. I'm a naturopathic physician. I finished schooling in Portland, Oregon at the National College of Natural Medicine. I did undergraduate before then, pre-med before then those 4 years, and as everyone has definitely mentioned, there's a lack of residencies in our education, and so I had to create my own, as one of your NDs in Anchorage mentioned. So then I was an understudy and learning for many years under someone practicing primary care in Vermont before I then started practicing primary care. So I am practicing in Vermont as an ND in primary care, and because Dr. Joshua Green covered so much, I'm going to address a few of the concerns that some of the early speakers mentioned. One of those is that post-education in pharmacology in Vermont, we are required to then take an additional board exam in pharmacology. We then, after passing that, do have supervision for our first 100 scripts or year of prescribing, whichever is longer, by someone who has had full formulary with no complaints against their record and for 5 or more years. So I have completed that review and am prescribing in a primary care setting. And when I say that emphasis, that's because I would never implant an IUD. I would never prescribe anti-cancer drugs. I would never prescribe heart failure drugs. Those are for specialists in those areas. An NP, an MD in primary care, myself, an ND in primary care, that's not what we do. And I don't get the sense that that's what the Alaskan naturopaths are asking for. They're asking for a formulary that's appropriate to the scope in which they were trained. And that's what we do in Vermont. It's been working very well. As Dr. Green mentioned, we've had zero complaints since that formulary was created. I did want to also mention that there were a few things that were assumptions, and I think that most of you caught that as people were grasping at Wikipedia and the Oxford Dictionary for things about naturopaths, so I'm not sure how familiar they really are with our education. I do also want to say we would never prescribe a homeopathic when someone needs to go to the emergency room. That's not something that I would ever educate any of my residents in doing. We also do have continuing education. That continuing education is required of us, 30 continuing education credits every 2 years, so that we are up to date on prescribing and other forms, 4 of those in opioids because of the youth epidemic, and then an additional 6 in other pharmacology. And I think I'm getting close to my time, so I'll wrap it up. And I did want to thank you and leave a little time for a question or two if there were any.
All right. Are there any questions for Dr. Bowers? Representative Hannon has a question.
Thank you, Chair, through the Chair. You did mention that you did not feel trained, nor do you prescribe and implant IUDs. Do you do other birth control?
I do, yes. Thank you for asking. I was very well trained in oral contraceptives. I do not implant IUDs. That was not additional training I thought out myself. I refer to gynecologists in the area for that. I have a lot of patients for whom that is appropriate, and so they see a gynecologist to have that, or Planned Parenthood for that consultation and application. Other than oral contraceptives, obviously if someone is not a candidate, let's say they are a migraine patient and can have no estradiol in any kind of medication, we can consider other forms. I can prescribe diaphragms and spermicide and things like that, and I can discuss the entire life cycle of their fertility so that they can watch, track, and make that educated choice.
Follow up. Do you do Norplant implants? I think it's Norplant.
No, I do not. I did not have additional training in that, so I don't do it. I, again, refer for that.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your time today, Dr. Bowers. Next up, we have Dr. Daniel Young.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Hi, this is Dr. Daniel Young. I've been practicing naturopathic medicine for 28 years. 24 of those years have been in Eagle River, Alaska. Through the chair, I just, honorable members of the committee and Madam Chair Sponsold, I'd just like to thank you for taking the time to sort through all this. I am speaking in support of HB 91. I think that it's a good bill, and it's very reasonable to be able to allow naturopathic doctors to train, who are trained in what they're asking for in this bill, to be licensed. So just a quick little summation of our education is to be licensed in Alaska, we have to be accredited. We have to pass the NCLEX professional board exams that even when I took them 28 years ago were very rigorous, and that contained a minor surgery module as well as a pharmaceutical module. And then the U.S. Department of Education oversees the accreditation of naturopathic medicine just as well as they do allopathic and osteopathic medicine. So we have first professional degrees. That includes MDs, DOs, veterinarians, doctors of chiropractic. They're all first professional degrees. So we are regulated by the United States Department of Education. So when it comes down to education, I'm interested in what they have to say because they're coming from a non-biased perspective. For years, we've been trying to educate the legislature on just what we can provide for Alaskans. We have an excellent safety record. I refer to medical doctors all the time, to gastroenterologists, to endocrinologists, to surgeons. I use many different labs to run the labs to do proper diagnosis. People that come to see me know I'm a naturopathic doctor. They're glad I'm a naturopathic doctor, and I spend the time with them to help to figure out why it is that they are sick. Anybody can diagnose a disease and give an antibiotic. Now, the practice of medicine is hard, and sometimes mistakes are made. But we spend the time, and people appreciate the time that we spend, and we have a better outcome because we address all of the components that govern the health and balance in our patients. That's very unique to naturopathic medicine. So I really don't think another profession should dictate what it is that another profession, you know, provides. I don't think we're trying to fly a 747. I think we're just trying to work within the confines of what our training is, and it's very adequate to keep our medicine safe and available to the patients that exercise their choice to come in and see a doctor like us. So I urge you to pass, you know, House Bill 91 on from committee to the next step. So I think I'm near my 4 minutes, so I'll end it there. Thank you very much for your time.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony today, Dr. Young. Is there any questions? All right. There's no questions. Moving on to Dr. Gary Ferguson.
Yeah, this is Dr. Gary Ferguson. Did you just call my name?
I sure did. It's your turn to testify, sir. You got 4 minutes.
Thank you. So I'm Dr. Gary Ferguson. I'm a licensed naturopathic doctor here in the state of Alaska. I'm originally from the Aleutian region, a community called Sandpoint. Grew up there and went to naturopathic medical school because I believe in holistic-based approaches and as well as indigenous-based approaches to healing, which include botanical medicine and physical medicine. And excuse me, I had to wrap up and take care of a little one right now. So as far as the Health Bill 91, I'm here to support that. And, you know, as far as our training, you know, as Dr. Young has shared and others, that we passed a very stringent licensing exam. And as far as practice in the state, I practiced in the state of Oregon prior. And one of the things that I enjoyed there was a DEA license for Schedule II substances. And, you know, as far as, like, we practice safely in Oregon. And when I came to Alaska, I was really surprised that our bill was so archaic and restrictive, which really, in my work in the tribal health system, I've worked in the tribal health system since 2002. And one of the things that I really saw was that without the ability to prescribe, I wasn't able to help patients appropriately in rural situations to manage their medications, many of whom were needing to lower their blood pressure medicine or alter their medicines because they were so successful with the, our practices. So I think that's one of the concerns that I really want to bring forward is I think it really allows us to to practice as we're trained. And so, you know, a little story I want to share is a patient who I saw who was diagnosed with premature ovarian failure. And one of the things and of course, you know, as was shared before, I think all of us do our best as physicians. And, you know, some of us, we misdiagnose, we don't get it right. And, you know, I think in the current paradigm of seeing patients for 5 minutes or 15 minutes, you know, I see my first patient 2 hours, actually, and then the subsequent follow-ups are an hour. Like, we really hear the story. And in this case, it was actually PCOS, or polycystic ovary syndrome. And so we treated her, and then in an interdisciplinary setting of other allopaths and other colleagues, we helped her have 2 children. And so, I mean, it was just such a beautiful success story. And it's one of those where, you know, it takes a multidisciplinary team, and naturopaths are such an important part of that. I also serve on the Alaska Addiction Professionals Association, the Municipality of Anchorage Health Commission, and a variety of other volunteer positions in the state. And, you know, I see such a need for holistic-based approaches that naturopaths can bring. And this bill will allow us to practice as we're trained. And, you know, being an Alaska Native person, I really see the need for culturally-based approaches, and we can bring those to Alaskans. So thank you so much for your time, Madam Chair, and the committee.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony today, Dr. Ferguson. Are there any questions for Dr. Ferguson? All right. Thank you very much for your time today. Next up, we're going to go back up to Annette O'Connell. I guess she got dropped from the line. Are you on the line, Ms. O'Connell?
Yes, I am.
All right.
My name is Annette O'Connell, and I'm calling you as a consumer. I was born with celiac disease and diagnosed shortly after birth in 1950 by a guest doctor from Northern European countries. Celiac was first recognized in Holland during World War II. As an infant, my diet followed the diagnosis, but slowly ignored as I began to thrive. My parents were good parents, but somehow did not understand that it was a lifelong condition and would not get better. In fact, they even told me I had been diagnosed with celiac disease, and that meant I was sensitive to fats. As an adult, I was in constant suffering with GI issues, such as diarrhea, constipation, inflammation, throwing up after meals. I had many, many consultations with MDs and was diagnosed from being mentally ill to having leukemia. In desperation, I, went to see a naturopathic doctor. I was quickly and accurately diagnosed with celiac disease, put on a proper diet, and all my symptoms faded away. What a new world. Before this point, I did not know what it was like to eat and not be in some kind of pain. It was up to me to make use of this new information, not use some pill prescribed by medical doctors. Now, due to Alaska's antiquated laws dealing with naturopathic doctors, I must travel outside of Alaska to receive the care I have come to trust, but also the medications I require for my thyroid condition. Please stop this vendetta the medical establishment has against any other profession that impedes on their territory. They believe they are the only branch of the medical professionals that are qualified to offer services, and that others are not safe. Now, I have three quick observations for what I've been listening to the last hour, hour and a half. This is an identical replay of what optometry went through to get their prescriptive rights. It's almost word for word. Yes. Second, I just want, this might be a little harsh, and I'm sorry. I just want you to remember what branch of medicine brought us the opioid epidemic. Everybody is trying to work to be good professionals. And I just urge you to pass this bill, House Bill 91. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you very much, Ms. O'Connell. I, too, have noticed the similarities. All right.
Thank you. I'm not crazy. Thank you.
All right. Are there any questions for Ms. O'Connell? All right. Seeing none, we're going to move on to Dr. David Schlecht. Or Schleich.
Thank you kindly, Madam Chair. My name is David Schleich. I'm a recently retired president of National University of Natural Medicine, former president of the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine, one of the founding board members of the International Congress of Naturopathic Medicine, which, of course, led to the recent establishment of the World Naturopathic Federation. I have been, in the last 35 years, vigorously engaged since completing my PhD at the University of Toronto in aspects of professional formation, that is to say, how professions take their place in civil society. And I've seen in recent years in Alaska and elsewhere the growth of interest among patients and other healthcare providers in naturopathic medicine. What saddens me as someone who has written a great deal about and researched a great deal about professional formation is that there is a very uneven, in fact, often inadequate understanding of naturopathic training and credentialing. For example, the comments, which some of which I found disrespectful and a bit glib, I mean, that we would understand the efforts of naturopathic professionals to, in fact, enhance their management of medications within their scope as somehow being a camel's nose under the tent is not helpful, nor that rather odd comment about a Boeing 737 and a Cub. Those kinds of comments, I think, come from a place of concern that the naturopathic professionals may do harm. Indeed, because I've been president of the two major institutions in the United States and Canada, as well as a vice president academic of a post-secondary institution in addition to that, and have been active in researching professional formation, I can tell you that the growth in activity of naturopathic professionals, not only in evidence-based medicine, but of course in clinical practice, has been remarkable, especially in the last 20 years. I'm wanting to tell you that it's a very good idea that we support and enhance the managing of medications within the scope for Alaska's naturopathic professionals.
as outlined in HB 91. The rising number of studies that the Healthcott Research Institution at our university and, of course, the Canadian one in Ottawa is remarkable in this regard, too. I'm talking about seven-figure studies with the NIH and elsewhere. These are not little anecdotal pieces of work. These are substantial bodies of research that not only corroborate the effectiveness of naturopathic practice and principles, but also, of course, contribute to the growing knowledge some professionals call integrative medicine. I want to say as well that there are many states and provinces in the United States and Canada that do regulate naturopathic doctors, and many of them as primary care physicians. And the doctors who graduated from National University and certainly from the Canadian College in Toronto are extraordinarily well trained, and in fact to provide services in communities, whether they're urban or rural or remote for that matter. The earlier comment that the education and clinical education and the outcomes of the years of study that naturopathic doctors must go through from the Department of Education, it includes three categories, you see, of accreditation, not only programmatic accreditation, which is what the Licensing Committee for Medical Education does. We have the same thing in the naturopathic world. But it's also state accreditation and regional accreditation, in addition to the work of NABNE, the North American Board of Naturopathic Examiners, who of course, implement the NPLEX exams, which were dissed a little bit with some anecdotal examples by an earlier speaker. NABNE is a very rigorously monitored process by the North American Board of Naturopathic Examiners to make certain that those board exams are not only rigorous but current. I would encourage our allopathic and biomedicine professional colleagues to become more familiar with the rigor, depth, and extent of naturopathic practice and training, particularly the training and education. We have hundreds and hundreds of students who are coming forward because they have a belief in an approach to medicine which is less dependent on pharmaceuticals and, of course,
Dr. Schleich, that's your time.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony today. Are there any questions for Dr. Schleich? All right. Seeing none, we are going to move on to Natalie Wiggins.
Hi. This is Dr. Natalie Wiggins. I am also a naturopathic physician practicing in Anchorage, Alaska. Thank you for taking my call, Madam Chair. I am in support of House Bill 91. As I'm speaking to you, I'm sitting here in my office responding to a patient case who has requested from me a Synthroid prescription and would like me to manage that prescription for her. And I'm literally sitting here responding to her, explaining that I do not carry prescriptive privileges in this state and that she would need to manage that with one of our advanced nurse practitioners in our office. I run into this all day in my practice. I provide excellent patient care. I've been in practice on and off since 2009, mostly in the state of Alaska. I have a history of practice in Arizona, where I did carry and maintain a DEA license. And that DEA license covered me for, you know, class 3 to class 5, controlled substances, but I also had the ability to write non-controlled prescriptive medications for patients, including asthma inhalers or antibiotics or blood pressure medication. So these are all things that would greatly increase my patient care. It would make it a lot easier. This patient is going to have to now wait to be able to get in with one of our nurse practitioners for management of this medication, which is an easy medication for me to maintain. I'm well trained in doing so. As Dr. Seibrick mentioned earlier, we do have safe prescriptive writing privileges in 14 other states. We are highly trained to maintain medications, and I would urge you to support this bill.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony today. Is there any questions for Dr. Wiggins? All right. So we're at 5:16 right now. We have two additional testifiers. Would you guys mind staying a couple of minutes later to allow them to testify? All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Cameron O'Connell, you're next up.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I am going to read you a letter, if that's all right, from the last time I testified.
All right.
I'm writing in support of House Bill 91, and I'm a naturopathic doctor. Born and raised in Alaska, I hope to come back to the state once I'd finished my medical training and residency to set up a practice and give back to the greater Anchorage community. The decision was not easy. My residency was in California, and as such, I had prescription rights. Having to give up the ability to do something as simple as put my patients on levothyroxine for hypothyroidism made my move back to Alaska a much more difficult decision than it should have been. A few examples of how this limited scope of practice has impacted my ability to provide care, and these are, of course, from a year ago. I have more since then. But one was a woman came into my office, and she had fears about vaccination and subsequently had not vaccinated her children. I alleviated those fears, and she agreed to get her children vaccinated. However, I was unable to write a prescription or provide any vaccines in my office. An opportunity was missed to give treatment, and this, from a public health perspective, is a poor outcome. I had a patient with a lower respiratory infection come into my office. Once again, I've had more since I wrote this letter. And I provided the naturopathic standard of care, including informing the patient of when she would need to progress from conservative treatment to pharmaceuticals. The patient was discouraged to find she would have to pay another large fee to go to an urgent care or another provider to receive basic antibiotic therapy if the need arose. In closing, please consider updating our bill to a more modern scope that lets us utilize all of our training. The statute governing my profession was passed in 1987. I was born in 1982. I've grown a lot in 32 years, and so should our legislation. That's the end of the letter I had previously written. However, the last time I testified, residency has become a hot topic. I did, in fact, have a residency, as stated in the letter, in California, and one of the questions that was asked at that time is whether or not I was overseen by both MDs and NDs, and yes, I was. I was overseen by three medical doctors and one naturopathic doctor. And that's the end of my testimony. Does anybody have any questions I can answer?
All right. Are there any questions for Dr. O'Connell? All right. Seeing none, thank you very much. Next up is, last up is Vicki Kennedy.
Yeah. Good evening, Madam Chair. Vicki Jo Kennedy here. Thank you. I am once again homesick and do miss coming up there and listening live. And I do want to thank you for putting in overtime today. But I am overwhelming in support of this House Bill 91. And there's a real good reason, and there's two of them in Kodiak that are phenomenal. I have yet to find out if there's one here in Juneau. And if there is one, I would sure like to know. But just one thing I want to add is we've put almost 400 medical doctors in prison, yes, prison, for overriding opioid prescriptions in the last 8 years. They didn't start cracking the whip, and it was a little too late, but there are over 400 that did go to prison. And most medical doctors are phenomenal. I love them, but they're in the pockets of the big pharma. And I don't think the naturopaths will do that to us. So I am in support of 91, and I've listened all afternoon to everything today, and you've heard some real good testimony, and I know you're all very smart people, so thank you for listening to me and to all the great testifiers today.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony today. Are there any questions for Ms. Kennedy? All right, seeing none, we are going to close public testimony for the day. I want to thank everybody who called in, many of whom sat online for about 2 hours. There's obviously a lot of interest in the topic. We're going to go ahead and set this bill aside for today for further consideration this next week. For next week, on Monday, we're going to hear three bills. We're going to hear House Bill 232, the Municipal Tax Credit Bill by Representative Hopkins. We'll take public testimony, consider amendments, and look to the will of the committee. The amendment deadline is noon on Monday. HB 93 on military spouse courtesy licenses by Representative Tuck will also be up on Monday. We'll hear from the bill sponsor. And then set the bill aside for future consideration. House Bill 235, the TVEP reauthorization bill sponsored by Representative Wool, will be considering amendments and looking to the will of the committee. The amendment deadline is at noon on Monday, same as for House Bill 232. On Wednesday, we're going to hear just one bill, House Bill 27 on the regulation of flame retardant chemicals by Representative Tarr. If for some reason work on House Bill 235 isn't completed on Monday, we'll take it up on Wednesday. This is, of course, all sort of dependent on operating budget being on the floor this next week. And then on Friday, we'll be hearing one bill, House Bill 93 on military spouse licenses by Representative Tuck, as mentioned previously, for public testimony. The time is 5:21, although I think our clock in the room is a little bit off, and this hearing of the House Labor and Commerce Committee is now adjourned. Thank you.